Okay, so my name is Alec Wallman. I'm going to tell you about Centrifuge. Centrifuge is a system that we've been building at Microsoft that provides integrated lease management and partitioning for services that run inside the data center. This is joint work with Atul Adja and John Dunnigan. Now, at the time that we were designing and building Centrifuge, Atul was working in the Microsoft Live Mesh product group. And Live Mesh, for those of you who are not familiar with it, is a cloud-based synchronization service. Okay. So, suppose I have two laptops, and I'd like to maintain a synchronized folder or a synchronized directory on both of these devices. To enable this, these devices would actually need to have some mechanism for finding each other when they're online. And the challenge here, if these are laptops, for instance, is that their IP addresses might change over time. So now what I'd like to do is run through an example of how to provide a cloud-based rendezvous service for devices. Okay. So I have a device, D1, that has just come online. And the first thing it does is it sends a request to my rendezvous service saying, here's my current IP address. The first recipient of that request is a front-end web server. And what that server is going to do is it's going to try to figure out which is the server that runs in the application tier that stores the contact information for that particular device, D1. When it figures that out, it's going to forward the request onto that application server. And then it's going to actually perform the action of storing device D1's current IP address. Now suppose I have that second device, D2, and it actually wants to start up the synchronization process, so it needs to know, tell me what D1's current IP address is so that I can connect to it. It sends that request to the cloud-based rendezvous service, arrives at a different front-end web server. That front-end web server does the same thing. It says, how do I find the application server that stores the contact information for device D1? When it finds that, it forwards the request to that same application server and then reads D1's current IP address and sends that response back to D2. Okay. Now, the thing I'd like to point out about this is that the application that we're providing here is incredibly simple. It's just a table that maps device names to IP addresses. But there are a whole bunch of problems that I need to address if I want to build a scalable cloud service that provides this rendezvous service for devices. The first problem I need to solve is, how do I assign responsibility for items to these application servers? And for the rest of the talk, I'm going to refer to this as the partitioning problem. The next issue I need to deal with is, how do I deal with the fact that servers at the application tier can be added and removed? They may crash. So how do I deal with all of the dynamics at the application tier? Next, how do I avoid requests for the same item winding up at different servers? And that's a challenge because of the dynamics of the servers at the application tier. And I'm going to preview the Centrifuge solution for this problem, and that is we're going to use the leases to ensure that you know that you've arrived at the right place. And then lastly, how do I adapt to changes in load? Okay, so these four problems are combined are what Centrifuge is designed to address. And I'd like to point out then that the goal of Centrifuge is to provide a reusable component that solves sort of the distributed systems complications of building this kind of a service. So that the goal here is not all developers are experts in distributed systems. We want the app developers to be able to focus on the semantics of their application. And we want to wrap up all of the hard distributed systems aspects into this reusable component. So, Centrifuge is a reusable component for interactive services. However, it's not a completely general service. We're targeting a particular class of services that have a certain set of characteristics. And because we were working with the Live Mesh team at the time, we used the requirements of a particular set of Live Mesh backend services that they wanted to build to drive certain aspects of the Centrifuge design. So now let me cover sort of the specific characteristics of the services we want to enable with Centrifuge. The first is that these services are interactive. And the impact of that is that low latency, being able to provide fast, responsive responses to end users, is critical for the service in order to get a set of happy users. The impact of this is that the application servers, we want those application servers to operate on in-memory copies of the state. Now, in addition, the application tier is, in fact, going to operate on cached data for these services. So that means the truth about this data, the origin copy of the data, is hosted either on clients or on back-end, highly available persistent storage. Another characteristic of the services that we want to enable with Centrifuge is that they're designed to scale to a very large number of objects. So going back to my device example, we'd like to be able to support a huge number of devices. And then the final characteristic of these services that guides the design of Centrifuge to a certain extent is that even the most popular object, we don't make the assumption that the popularity of objects is uniform, but we say that even the most popular object, the one that has the most load, can be handled by a single server. And that means that we don't need to use replication in order to handle load issues. So now I'd like to present the main contributions of Centrifuge. Prior systems that have provided leasing and partitioning have solved them as separate components. The main contribution of Centrifuge is that we're going to show that integrating leasing and partitioning allows scaling to a massive number of objects in an elegant way. This integration requires us to rethink the traditional lease manager mechanisms and API. And in particular, Centrifuge uses something that we call manager-directed leasing. What we mean by that is that the manager is going to make partitioning decisions, and it's going to convey those decisions through the lease protocol mechanism. With previous lease managers, clients were the ones that would typically request a lease, whereas in Centrifuge, the manager is assigning leases. And so that leads to a non-traditional API for lease managers, which I'm going to cover later. Okay, so the outline of my talk is I'm going to first talk about the basic design of Centrifuge, what it does, and how a programmer would use it. Then I'm going to cover a little bit of Centrifuge internals. And finally, I'm going to talk about the results of a live deployment of Centrifuge inside Live Mesh. Okay, so let me begin with a diagram of the Centrifuge architecture. There's three main components of Centrifuge. Lookups, which are basically any server that links in the Centrifuge lookup library. And in a typical scenario, we expect that these are going to be the front-end web servers that I showed in my earlier example. Centrifuge also has a manager. The manager is the component that implements the logic around both partitioning and assigning leases. And then the last component is servers that we call owners. And these are servers that, in a typical scenario, are going to be that tier of application servers. And an owner is simply any server that links in the Centrifuge owner library. And one characteristic that I'd like to point out for owners that's sort of a unique design point for Centrifuge is that we're making the assumption that owners maintain a single copy in memory of the data that's going to be operated on by the application. We're not using replication across that tier of application servers, and we're not requiring that the application make use of stable storage on the owner nodes. Okay, so the first issue I'd like to look at in terms of Centrifuge's design is how does Centrifuge's leasing scale? And the issue here is that a naive approach of using one lease per object is going to have difficulty scaling to support a very large number of objects. So the basic approach that we're going to use in Centrifuge is to hand out leases on ranges rather than on individual objects. So the obvious question here is, what do I mean by a range? Where do they come from? Okay. And the approach that we're going to take is that we're going to use consistent hashing to partition a flat namespace. So the application defines a key, and then we apply the hash function to that namespace. We're going to assign leases on contiguous ranges of the hashed namespace. So the impact of this, then, is that we only need one lease per virtual node in the consistent hashing system. And in the current deployment of Centrifuge in production, we use 64 virtual nodes per server. So that this means that independent of the number of objects hosted on a server, I only need to handle or renew 64 leases per server. So what you see then from this mechanism is that we have the manager deciding on the partitioning and then conveying its decisions through leasing, so that we have a single mechanism that handles both leasing and partitioning. Okay, so manager-directed leasing, as I mentioned earlier, leads to a non-traditional API. There is no way for you to simply ask to acquire a specific lease. Instead, what you do with Centrifuge is you ask it where you should go to find your data, and then you check that you ended up in the right place. So let me now go through my example again of a device rendezvous service. A client sends an incoming request to find a specific device D. That request shows up at a front-end server. The front-end server calls lookup and passes in the key, which in this case is the device name. And it gets back a URL. And this is just a string that Centrifuge doesn't even need to interpret. But the idea then is that the application, the portion of the application that's running on the front end, now knows which owner node to contact by looking at the result of lookup. So it then forwards that request onto, in this particular example, the server labeled M6. And then when it arrives there, it uses the Centrifuge API to check that it ended up in the right place. It first calls checkLeaseNow, whose parameter is D, again, the name of the key that we're using in our example. If checkLeaseNow is successful, that's going to return a handle. The application then does its application-specific operation on the data, and in this particular example, that's just looking up D's current IP address. And then at the end of the operation, we issue another checkLease call. And here we take two parameters, the name of the key, which is again D, and also the handle that we got that was the result of the first call to checkLease. What this does is this ensures that during the time that the application-specific operation was taking place, which depending on the application could take potentially a long time, we need to ensure that the lease was held by this particular owner during that entire time period in order to provide this single copy guarantee that leases can provide for us. Okay? So using leases then provides a simple programming model. When you perform a read, you know that you're doing a read on a value that is up to date. Now there's two other aspects of this that I'd like to point out. The first is that in terms of making Centrifuge a reusable component, Centrifuge has no knowledge of the protocol that's being used to communicate between lookups and owners. And so that allows us to apply this to a wide variety of different kinds of applications. The other thing I want to point out is that Centrifuge has no inherent knowledge of the operations that are being performed by the application. It doesn't know if it's a read, a write, or a combined read-write, all of those things. The last thing I want to point out is that Centrifuge is not a cache. So Centrifuge doesn't help with the task of how you represent the data at these owner nodes. It doesn't actually help with any of the storage management issues there. That's entirely up to the application. Okay. The next issue about Centrifuge's design that I want to talk about is this notion of storing a single copy of the data in memory at owner nodes. And this notion that we want to be able to support recovery from clients, which is sort of an unusual thing if you know how many data center services are deployed today. And why do we want to do this, as opposed to, for instance, replicating the data items across different servers at that in-memory tier, at the application servers? Well, the observation we make is that servers in a data center environment are really quite stable. So the benefits, then, of supporting recovery from clients is that it's much cheaper to avoid holding multiple copies of your data in RAM. RAM is actually quite expensive if you're holding a huge number of objects. The second benefit is that you can avoid the complexity and performance issues associated with, for instance, using a quorum protocol across these in-memory servers. And the last point I'd like to point out is that supporting recovery from clients doesn't necessarily add extra complexity. And the reason for this is that you need some mechanism to tolerate correlated failures anyway, because correlated failures can happen in data center environments. And so if you're holding all of your state in memory, there's a chance that you might lose all of your replicas. Correlated failures can occur either from security vulnerabilities or from the fact that you need to reboot all your servers. You have to carefully manage patch installation if you want to avoid correlated failures. Now, there is a cost to pursuing this recovery model from clients. And that cost is that when an application server crashes, items are not available until the clients republish. Okay. So, how does Centrifuge support recovery from clients? Well, when an application server crashes, the way that we support this is that we deliver something called loss notifications to all of the lookups that are for that particular application. And these loss notifications indicate which of the consistent hashing ranges were hosted on the server with the manager lost contact with or discovered that it had to effectively those leases were lost. Okay? This allows the application to determine, because the loss notifications indicate which of the consistent hashing ranges were lost, this allows the application to determine which clients need to republish their state. And I just wanted to point out that all of the live mesh services that are currently using Centrifuge actually use this model of relying on clients to recover their state. Okay, so now I'm going to wrap up the design section simply by summarizing the key features of Centrifuge. I've already talked about partitioning, spreading data across the owners, consistency, using leases to ensure that you operate on a single copy, and recovery through loss notifications. There's two other major things that Centrifuge does. It handles membership, in other words, understanding which owners are currently active in the system, and it does that, again, by using the lease protocol for owners to indicate liveness to the manager. And then the last aspect that I'm not going to cover in detail of Centrifuge is that it provides load balancing. The manager can learn about load on the owner nodes by them reporting their load through the leasing mechanism again. And then the manager has an opportunity to rebalance the namespace by adjusting the number of virtual nodes assigned to any given server. So what I want to point out is by covering these five major features, Centrifuge assists with the vast majority of the distributed systems issues related to scaling out a middle tier of application servers that keep their state in memory. So now I'm going to cover a little bit about Centrifuge's internals, and I want to cover three things: the protocol in between that runs between the lookups and the manager, the protocol between owners and the manager, and a little bit about how the manager is highly available. So the first thing I want to tell you is about the protocol between the lookup nodes and the manager. And the basic approach that we're taking here is that the lookups are going to prefetch an entire copy of the manager's lease table. So basically the way this works is that the lookups use a sequence number to indicate what version of the lease table they have, and the manager can then send them changes. Now, the impact of lookups having a complete copy of the manager's lease table is as follows. First, it means that lookups are fast. You don't actually need to contact the manager and incur potential delay by making that network call in order to provide a quick response to where I need to go to find a particular data item. And this is enabled by our compact representation of the lease table that comes from using consistent hashing. The second thing I want to point out about having the lookups have an entire copy of the lease table is that the manager load is now not dependent on the incoming request load being handled by the lookups. Now I'm going to briefly talk about the lease protocol that runs in between the owner and the manager nodes. And there's two properties I want to mention here. The first is we tried to make this protocol robust. And the way we do this is to ensure that owners have multiple opportunities to retain their leases. So the way that this happens is that every 15 seconds, the owner asks the manager if it can renew its leases. And the leases that the manager hands out last for a full 60 seconds. So what that means then is that it would take three consecutive lost or extremely delayed messages in order for an owner to lose its lease. The other aspect of the lease protocol that I want to mention is safety. We want to ensure that the owner never thinks that it has the lease when the manager disagrees. And here we use a solution that previous lease managers have adopted, which is basically to rely on clock rate synchronization. The last aspect of centrifuge internals that I want to touch on is the high availability design. And here we're using a design similar to what Chubby did, where we've separated the manager program logic from the Paxos group. And the benefit of this is that the implementation of the manager can actually use non-determinism in its implementation. So, for example, that means you can call a random number generator or use a system timer in your implementation of the leasing and partitioning logic that runs on these nodes that I've identified as leaders and standbys in the diagram. Okay. Now, Centrifuge is designed just to run within a single data center. Our scalability target, based on the deployment plan for the Live Mesh product group, is that we wanted to be able to scale to approximately 1,000 machines in one cluster. And the long-term plan for scaling beyond that is simply to scale by deploying multiple clusters. Now, we are actually working on a multi-cluster geo-distributed version of Centrifuge, but that's beyond the scope of this talk. So now I'm going to highlight a couple of results from the live deployment and then wrap up. Okay. Live Mesh was first deployed to customers in April of 2008. The results that I'm going to talk about today cover a 2.5-month period from December 2008 to March of 2009. We're looking at one particular cluster running Centrifuge that had 1,000 lookup nodes and 130 owners. And the manager configuration in this deployment was 8 servers. 3 servers running the acting as leaders and standbys, running the actual manager logic, and then 5 servers in the Paxos group. Okay, I want to look at the following 3 questions in terms of the results. First, is the Centrifuge manager a scalability bottleneck in the steady state at this particular scale? Second, how well does Centrifuge handle high churn events, which are the things that should cause the most load on the Centrifuge manager? And then the last issue I want to look at is how stable are servers in production, which justifies this decision for using recovery from clients. Okay, so the first result I want to highlight is that in the steady state, load is low. What this picture shows is for this 2.5-month period, which is on the x-axis, the CPU load on the top graph and the network load on the bottom graph. And each of the points on these graphs are showed for a 1-hour period, what was the CPU and network load. And what you can see from this graph is that the CPU load is quite low, less than 5%, and the network load is also very low. Even the peaks are less than 100 kilobytes per second of network load. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is sort of the most challenging case for Centrifuge, which is when there is a lot of churn in the system. And the first aspect of this is I want to mention that correlated failures, in fact, do occur in real life. What this graph shows is an 1.5-hour period on January 15th where a patch installation occurred in the data center. So what happened was that the set of machines in that cluster were all rebooted during this 1.5-hour period. And what the graph just shows is from the perspective of the current leader of the manager set, how many owners was it currently in contact with? And so you can see by the variation here that this period of churn lasted for about 1.5 hours. Okay, now this graph shows is, again, CPU load on the top and network load on the bottom, basically for this 1.5-hour period where the churn was occurring. And we're looking at, and what you can see from this graph is that even when there's very high churn, the load on the system is relatively low. The CPU experienced 2 spikes of load. The points in these graph are showed are measurements of load over a 30-second period for all of these points. So what you see from CPU load is that, in general, the load on the CPU stays below 15%. And in terms of the network load, even at the peaks, it's less than 500 kilobytes per second. Okay, the last thing I want to look at in terms of results is how stable are servers in this environment. So what we're looking at here is a period from January 15th through March 2nd, and there were no patch installations during this period. So how stable were the owners then? What we found is that they were very stable. There were only 10 lease loss events during this entire 1.5-month period. In 7 cases, the server recovered very quickly, less than 10 minutes. And in 3 cases, it recovered in less than an hour. So these results validate our decision to avoid the cost of replication and use loss notifications to republish state. So I'd like to wrap up now. Centrifuge simplifies the task of building scalable application tiers that use in-memory state. By combining leasing and partitioning, we get a simple, powerful, and scalable protocol. We've deployed Centrifuge within Live Mesh since April of 2008, and it's currently in use by 5 different Live Mesh backend services. And then finally, we've looked at Data Center server stability, and it enables this single copy in RAM with loss notifications model. That's my talk. Thank you.
Hi, Ben Reed from Yahoo.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you talked about interactive, the need for interactive systems, but 60 seconds is a very high lease time. What happens if you make it lower?
The reason why we chose 60 seconds was actually because we want to provide robustness in terms of if the owners become heavily loaded, we want to prevent them from losing their leases unless they need to. Now, when you're doing recovery from clients, the 60-second lease timer is probably not the primary impact on latency because you actually have to get the republish all the way out to clients and have them republish their state. So when failures do occur, there is going to be a noticeable gap until the state gets republished on those notifications. And so the design here is, to a certain extent, depending on the fact that the servers are stable. Now, Centrifuge does, however, support using these loss notifications to republish the state from a server that sits in the back end as well, a highly available server. So in that case, you might want to reconfigure Centrifuge to be more aggressive in the lease protocol and to use a shorter lease timer.
So did you try? I mean, what happens when you lower the lease time?
We have not run in production using a short lease timer, but we have done experiments in the lab using a short lease timer, and it seems to work quite well.
And just in terms of scalability,
yeah.
I mean, the number of owners you had was very small for the applications you're targeting, 130 owners. I mean, how...
We've done experiments, again, looking at a much larger number of owners. But again, our scalability target for owners was still on the order of 1,000 owners, not many thousands of owners. And there the model is that you would scale out deploying multiple clusters.
Hi, Alec. Günther, Cornell University. I really enjoyed the work.
Thank you.
I'd just like to observe that the interface that you're proposing for the API to the servers is that of load-linked store conditional, it seems to me, upon closer reading. You have these version numbers, and once the transaction is complete, you're checking the version number. So the question then is, what happens when you have concurrent updates and these store conditionals, or what you're calling check-lease continuous, fails?
So when
check-lease
continuous fails, what is the application developer supposed to do? The answer there is that you know that at some point during when you were trying to execute this operation, it was no longer the valid copy, okay? And so what you're supposed to do there is basically not return your result back to the client because it may be stale. And instead, you're supposed to call lookup again at the lookup nodes, one of those front-end servers, and you should get a different response at that point, and the manager should direct you to the place that does have the valid lease for that object, and then you can re-execute your operation.
So does that also mean that the front-end code that you write has to be written in a functional style? That is, it should have no side effects because the continuous can fail?
I don't see intuitively why that needs to be the case, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, we'll take it offline.
Okay.
There's a moment I can describe. So you've done the lookup, you've got the object, you've done some operations. Those operations, if they were to have side effects and you were to check the lease or the metadata and that update were to fail, the side effect bearing transactions would have been performed on a stale copy of the object. So you have to undo them.
So where are these side effects that you're imagining to have occurred? Because the notion is that you're not allowed to expose any state from the owner where you did the operation, unless the checklist continuous succeeds.
Got it.
If it doesn't succeed, you can't expose state from that owner. Otherwise, you've messed up.
Great, thanks.
Okay.
Yep.